Yes, sir. Just hold on. The Honorable Mr. Michael Johnson will serve as your lead for your hearing today, and so he will be with you in just a second, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, sir. Can you hear me?
Yes, this is Nicholas.
Okay. Sir, could you please state your full name, your ADC number for us for the record?
Nicholas Colfer, 170126.
Okay, so you're currently before the Arizona Board of Executive Clemency. I'm going to introduce you to the board members conducting your hearing today. You have the Honorable Luis Quinones, the Honorable Dr. C.T. Wright, who's our board chair, the Honorable Mrs. Gail Rittenhouse, and my name is Michael Johnson, sir. I'm going to be acting as your lead panel during this discussion this morning. And also with us, sir, representing the Department of Corrections is the Mr. Westby. He's representing the Department of Correction as well as your parole officer, sir. We do have one supporter here, and I think it's Ms. Colfer. Am I right with that?
Correct.
Okay. Ms. Colfer, are you planning on speaking today? This morning?
Yes.
Okay. So, Mr. Colfer, I'd like to swear you, along with Ms. Colfer and Ms. Westby, in at this time. But prior to me doing that, let me just make another statement. Sir, prior to your hearing today, Mr. Colfer, you received and signed a notification form advising you of this board's hearing. You recall receiving and signing that form, sir?
Did you ask if I signed the form? I'm having a really hard time hearing you.
Okay, hold on a minute. So advising you of your hearing today, you received and signed a notification form advising you of this board's hearing. Do you recall receiving and signing that form, sir?
Yes, I do.
Okay, on that form, you were notified of your right to appear and speak on your own behalf or to hire a licensed attorney to represent you at your own expense. Did you hire an attorney or are you representing yourself today, sir?
I represent myself, no attorney.
Okay, so as I stated earlier, you do have one supporter here, Ms. Colfer. At this time, I'd like to swear you along with Ms. Colfer and Mr. Westby in, okay?
Okay.
Do you solemnly swear that you tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God, and do you so affirm? Mr. Colfer?
Yes.
Ms. Colfer?
I do.
Mr. Weston?
I do.
Okay, thank you. So your hearing today will be conducted in two phases. In phase one, the board will make a determination whether the terms and conditions of your community supervision have been violated. In phase two, we'll determine whether your community supervision should be revoked or reinstated. We're going to start out in phase one, Mr. Colfer. You have two allegations listed on your warrant, sir. I'm going to read each of those allegations to you. When I read those allegations to you, I need you to state whether the allegations are either true or false, okay?
Okay.
The first allegation states that you're in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision Number 12E, as demonstrated by you having contact with the victim, Ms. Angela Colfer, via text message, email, telephone, social media, and the third party on or about April 16, 2018. Sir, is that true or false?
Yes, it is true.
Okay. So the next allegation states you're in violation of Arizona Condition of Supervision Number 7, as demonstrated by your use of methamphetamine on or about April 17, 2018, per the task LCMS lab report dated April 30th, 2018. Sir, is that true or false?
No, that is not true.
Okay. Sir, given that you stated that allegation number two is false, I'm going to go to the parole officer, Mr. Westby, to get some additional information, okay?
Yes. April 17th, 2018, P.O. Palmer took an oral swab from the offender in the Mesa Regional Parole Office. Subsequently, the offender tested positive for methamphetamine per the TASC LCMS report, lab report, dated April 30th, 2018. There is a copy of the lab report from TASC dated April 30th, 2018 attached to the warrant, which shows positive for methamphetamine.
So, Mr. Colfer, why do you say that's not true, sir?
I wrote you guys a letter. I don't know if you guys got it. I wrote my parole officer a letter. I was using steroids. I was in a cutting cycle. And I'm sure that's a violation right there, too. I don't use drugs. I don't have a drug problem. The website I ordered from, it did say it was test positive for amphetamine. It should, I don't know why it didn't come back as amphetamine, or if it did and it's the same meth, but I was not using meth. I was using steroids that were amphetamine based. So, I mean, so in a way, I guess I was, and I will take responsibility for my actions. I will do.
Okay. So based on the admission of Mr. Crawford, and I'm going to say for allegation one, and based on the admission on allegation number two, as well as the information contained in warrant number 2018W1122, I'm going to move to find that Mr. Crawford was delinquent, as he did violate the terms and conditions of the supervision that he may have lapsed or was about to lapse into criminal ways or company.
Second.
Agreed.
Okay, there's a motion by myself, second by Mr. Neal. Mr. Quinones, I mean?
Yes.
Agree with Ms. Rittenhouse. Agree with Dr. Wright. So we're going to go into phase two of the hearing. During phase two is where we'll make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate the community supervision. We're going to start off phase two. We'll get some additional information from the parole officer, Mr. Westby. Then we're going to go with some information in the warrant with you, sir. And then we'll be hearing from you as well as your wife, Ms. Cofer, okay?
Okay.
All right, Mr. Westby.
On May 12, 2014, Mr. Cofer was released from the Arizona Department of Corrections. He was arrested April 17, 2018 by ADC staff. There were no new charges. He was back in DOC custody April 17, 2018, with a projected community supervision end date of May 11, 2019. Zero escondes. Current conviction, 2006, armed robbery, 12 and a half years. Prior convictions, 2002, entering prosecution, first degree, 1.5 years. 2002, aggravated assault, 1.5 years. 2002, influencing a witness, 2 years. This is his second term in DOC. CUIR score 3.3, mental health score 2, substance abuse score 1. As TGA information notes, he's an admitted member of the Pepperwoods. Prior term of supervision, 2004, TIS release completion, 3 months. His disciplinary violations are moderate, with drugs, violence, sex acts, and rioting noted. Other arrest, 1998, assault, Washington, juvenile detention. All the arrests since then resulted in charges not filed or dismissed. His community risk score is a G7B8.
Okay, Mr. Crawford?
Yes.
So, and I see that Ms. Crawford is also here too, and I do have a letter that's here from Ms. Crawford that she has written to the board. I've had the opportunity to go through and read that letter. I also see that there's also a letter here from, hold on 1 minute. Looks like it's Justina Wilmont.
It's a letter
there. And also, So I read this letter. I'm going to just go through the one violation that you have on here, which you've already explained, which was the allegation number two, was the methamphetamine. And you said that you were taking some steroids that you ordered, and it came back and it said that it would test positive for amphetamines. Is that right?
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you.
In allegation number two, you said earlier that you had ordered some, I believe you said steroids.
Yes.
And that when you checked, when you ordered them, they did say that those steroids would come back as amphetamines, but not methamphetamines. Is that right?
Yes.
Why did you order them do you think it's said about itself?
I don't know, man. Like, I'm really in health, and it's really hard to work out in here, and I look forward to having better nutrition and actually getting my physique where I wanted to, and I kind of got into them right when I got out, and I don't know, like, I'm really in health, and I don't have no answer. I don't have no excuse or nothing. I shouldn't have been doing it, and I know I shouldn't have been doing it, and I was. You know, I don't have no excuse or, you know.
Okay, Mr. Lansky.
Yes, I just wanted to advise the board that for Task Laboratories, the test involved showed that it was positive for amphetamines, which, you know, would be a substance that would be in steroids. However, it's also positive for methamphetamines. Methamphetamines, there's a specific test for that, and none of the substances that are part of the material that composes methamphetamines would be part of steroids. This would be like boron and sulfur, which are the main ingredients to make methamphetamines.
Okay. So according to the test, Mr. Crawford, you tested positive both for amphetamine and methamphetamine. But I'm going to go on there, sir. I'm going to just ask you to, because I read the report, and there seems to be an ongoing situation that has been going on between you and your wife that has subsequently, there was a police report that was made. The PO instructed you not to have contact with your wife, and it's been an ongoing situation. So I'm going to ask you, Mr. Culper, to explain that situation to me, or where you're at currently with that situation.
Well, currently, this is a major wake-up call for me. You know, like, I know my record, and I know I've been in trouble my whole life. My whole family has been in trouble, and I grew up in a troubled family where we all led, followed our older brother. But my last 4 or 5 years, you know, like, I stepped away from everything. All I did is study self-help books to become a better father, better husband, and I hate this. I hate prison. I hate everything it represents. And I had plans to get out and do good, and I did. I adjusted really well. Now, when you and my boss told me, like, you're doing so good, just not in this situation with your wife, you know, and it's hard. It was hard. We've been together 14 years now. She was with me the whole 11-year sentence. She missed barely any visits. I watched my son grow up. They both waited for me to get out, and yeah, we didn't adjust really well at all. Like I said in my letter, like, we started fighting immediately and arguing, and then it just got worse. And I made a choice to move out, and then I came back because I'm not going to just give up on my marriage and my wife. And then it was just really hard. It was hard for both of us. I knew what I had to do, and it was just hard. It was hard after 11 years of her and my son waiting for me to say, okay, we're not going to have no contact other than counseling. And it was a mistake. I believe both of us, this is a major wake-up call. And it's like, I got a card out there. I built my credit up to 642. I know that this can't happen again. I know this, you know, and she knows that. We discussed it. We can't make the same mistakes, you know, and I'm not claiming I'm perfect, and we did make mistakes. It was just really hard for me to say, I can't see you, you know, like, after all this time, after her waiting for me, it was really hard, you know, and that's what it was. And where I'm at now is I know I won't make the same mistakes, and where she's at, she won't make the same mistakes. We'll follow any guidelines of parole, anything they recommend. I'll go to any housing unit they want. I'll go to any, I'll test every week. I'll test for steroids. I'll pay for them. I don't care. She'll pay, we'll pay for them together, you know. It's like, I got to get out for my son. I got to get out and prove that I'm not that same dude, you know, that all these promises I made, and now I'm back in there because of love, you know, of it's hard, you know, it was really hard.
Okay,
right. It was a major wake-up call for me. It was, and me being back in this place that I can't stand, I hate, and I never thought I'd be back in here, you know, and Well, you never thought I'd be back in here.
You guys did split up for a while, and then when you first got out, you went to a halfway, then you moved in with him, you got into it, you moved out, you were back in a halfway house, and it just seems that you guys are going back and forth, and Ms. Crawford contacted PO and said that you threatened to kill her or do harm to her, and she got an order of protection out against you. It just seemed like that was just a back and forth situation between the two of you, sir.
Yeah, I understand that. I know that. I know.
Okay.
I know. I mean, I'm willing to get put back on GPS, but if I'm willing to, if I have to live in Mesa at a halfway house and not to where it doesn't even show that I come into Maricopa other than under strict, whatever it is, at the parole office where I see my son or and get into counseling, you know, I'm willing to do anything to show that I'm not that same person. I'm an adult. I feel like I've grown up, and it's taken me a long time to grow up, and, you know, that's where it's at right now. I'm willing to do anything. Anything that the parole office wants me to do, and my wife's willing to do anything for this next year. You know, we're planning on moving out of state after this year, you know, moving up around her family, and it's just, it's going to be hard for her. It's going to, we're going to have to turn in the other car that we got. We're not going to be able to pay for it. I can't help with bills, you know. It's just, I can still do that if I'm out. Even if we're not having contact, at least I can have a real job, making real money, and supporting, helping, doing, paying my dues to my family, you know.
Okay. So I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions for you, sir.
Okay. What was that?
I'm going to see if the board has any additional questions. Any more additional questions from the board? I'm going to ask you to go ahead and come up here and speak. If you just come up to the mic, please say your full name when you get ready to speak, and then go ahead and present whatever information you'd like to present to the board, please.
My name's Angela Southern Cofer, and I'm requesting my husband to be released to community supervision with or without allowance of contact with me. I want him to be able to go back to work where he held the job for the entire 8 months, where he was promoted twice and had 3 raises. He was doing great, and he was doing excellent. We had a plan to go to counseling together. We had lived together the first 8 months. And then, you know, just it was a very difficult time adjusting because I had been alone all the sentence. I didn't know what married life was like. I didn't know what it meant to share decisions and responsibility. And I was very controlling, and I have some issues with my anger and, you know, things that provoked him instead of helped him. And I'm working on those with my psychiatrist and my counseling and doing domestic violence as well. That was the recommendation of his parole officer, his latest one, for us to do that separately until we were reunited together. But then we got into an argument when we ran into each other at our son's bus stop. And, you know, things were said back and forth. We both had affairs, very hurtful things that happened during our time of separation. And I panicked and I got scared and I was angry and emotionally reacted. And I called the PO on him and put him back. And that was, I shouldn't have done it because he had been holding his job. He had been seeing his son. They have a great bond, you know, and I ripped that away from him. So not only is it affecting my son, my husband and my son and me, you know, just, it's affected everyone. What else can I have here? Let's see. The whole time he was in prison, he never had any substance abuse, so I'm not sure where the meth came in, if it was after that. It sounds like it was after the date that he got taken into custody. You know, maybe that contributed to, like, whatever happened. I'm not sure what happened. But the whole time he was in prison, 11 and a half years, clean, no dirty ways. He had all minor tickets except for, I think there were 2 major. He has support. We got jobs lined up. He I've been in contact with all his former employers. They're ready to and willing to give him his job back. I have his car. I've been making payments. I've been making his credit card payments, keeping his credit good, so that way he can succeed outside, whether or not we're living together. And I'm not requesting that we live together again at this point. I think we do need time apart. We need time apart to become better people, work on ourselves, and be better parents for our son. And his son is approaching 13. He needs his dad. He even if it's a limited, supervised situation. And, you know, Nicholas has every reason to do good and do right by his son. And I think I was his only downfall with this. And I would get offended and call his parole over trivial things. And I know that got him in trouble. The thing, when we did live together for 8 months, I had called him once for an alcohol, because he was drinking beer, and he has no problem with it, but I was angry, and I called, so they put him on the monitor for 30 to 60 days. Successful, he even got transferred down to the Pinal County parole office, and they were okay with it. Even on the monitor, he was allowed to live with me. The thing that made Officer Lamb and Officer Wood ask him to leave was when the neighbors called the cops for, us arguing in the yard over an affair, over me speaking with another man. We got to a large argument, neighbor called the cops, I left for the night. And then I stayed gone for 2 weeks to get him a place to stay. After that, he went to the halfway house, and he got a new parole officer at that time. Officer Land, the one in Pinal County, never said that we could not have contact. He recommended marriage counseling. He was all about family, and even while living apart, to take those steps to work on our marriage, to go to church, to do the counseling for him to come back, to be able to come back home. When he went to Mesa, we didn't see each other for a month or more. At that time, we were seeing other people, things, going down that route. We decided to forgive each other, and we came back together. April 6th, it was Easter weekend. I left a note on his car, and I told him, I love you. I want to make our marriage work, and I'm not giving up. And I had that contact with him. I had no clue that his new officer said that there would be no contact. I dropped the order. I had an order of protection, but I dropped it because our son had to have the surgery. He wanted both parents. I needed both of us to be there as a family, taking turns and care for him. And then a parole officer called us in, and they said, we know you've had contact, and this has got to stop right now. So that was the first time I was made aware that even I thought that lifting the order of protection would allow us, but I discovered the GPS monitor on. So the time that we did talk on the phone, I don't think they restricted us from that. Because he told the supervisor, he said, cuff me up right now if I can't talk, at least talk to her on the phone. And it was like, he did not say we cannot talk on the phone. But we weren't allowed to see each other in person until the counseling was set up, and we were struggling finding the affordable counseling. And then, everything was like $450, and it's like, what do we do? We can't afford this. And, parole, they didn't have very many resources either. So we didn't get to start that. We didn't have a chance to start those counselings, but he did do an anger management. She didn't want us to have contact with each other because there was domestic violence in 2005, where we got into an argument and he had pushed me. And We're still allowed to live together because of the circumstances of us being together all those years, you know, raising our son in the prison to see his father, you know, just the goodness and see how good Nick did over the years. We were allowed to live together. He completed anger management for 6 months. He did that while living with me. He did it successfully. He never missed a UA. He never got a dirty up until this one I'm hearing about today. Nick was doing good. He was doing good. And it was just our inability to cope, problem solve, and communicate.
Did you understand that if he was not in custody, that if he was back out, that you guys could not have any contact, period? Phone, text, messages, no contact whatsoever? None?
As long as he had contact with his son and was getting his life on track and vice versa, yes. Yes, sir.
So you're aware that that's part of, because, you know, and reading through some of this, you know, part of it is that his biggest problem right now is the domestic violence and issues that the two of you are having, and the on and off relationship that you two keep going into, which is creating a situation, which is the main reason that he's locked back up. The PO is trying to work with, there's been a couple of POs trying to work with the two of you. But, you know, you got an order of protection against him. You called the PO, you took a video of him arguing with you, you sent that to the PO, you told the PO that you were afraid of him, that he was threatening to kill you. And those things, you know, keep adding up. And so those are the situations. And that's why mainly he's back incarcerated, because of those problems that the two of you have. And what I'm hearing you basically pretty much still say is that you guys still want to be together. And that's not something that
in
is...
In the long run.
For the entire time that he's on community supervision, if he was not to say that he's going to get out, but that he cannot have any contact, he still has almost a year left that you can't have any contact with him. And that's creating a problem. It's almost a setup for failure for him to do that, and you guys keep going through that. In your letter, you stated that you may be moving back.
That's something I'm thinking about doing, too.
To where your family is.
Yes. And so, based on what happened today, I'm deciding upon that factor. If I should move to Oregon. If he's going to stay in, I might as well move to Oregon. That way, when he gets out, he can come up there, fresh start, no ties with anybody from the past, and just going where we have more support for our whole family and just new positive environment, you know.
Okay.
Just starting fresh with the skills. And like in there right now, he's doing an electrician program, which is great. You know, he can get 6 months and be certified as an electrician. And there's also other jobs. Like if he does get out, he's got the groundskeeper. And he was crew leader. He got supervisor and everything. And, you know, I'm sad because I am just as much or more so at fault for him being there.
Okay. Let's see if the board has any questions. Mr. Quinones.
Yeah, I'll try to keep it short. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. Is it Kofer?
Yes.
Okay. First of all, I want to begin by saying that I do wish you the best on reconciling your marriage. There's nothing that says you guys can't put this behind you and move on. But I'm going to have to stop for 1 second. And I had a question for Mr. Respy is related to this, and that is Ms. Kofir has made a reference to dropping the protection order, but... am I correct that order would continue through to his son as well? Like that separation would be pretty strong?
I couldn't answer as far as the technicality on how that works with
I guess what I'm saying is that I don't want to say it sounds impossible, but it sounds almost impossible to maintain that relationship under these circumstances with that DV. With the DV conditions. for someone who's on community supervision?
That would be correct.
Okay, I guess that's not the final position. I guess my only point is, Ms. Kofler, is that with respect to both of you, that this really, for me as one voting board member, comes down to whether or not Mr. Kofler is suitable for community supervision, and I'm having a tough time seeing it that way. I do appreciate what you're saying. That's what I'm saying. I'm not trying to just be a wet blanket, but that's why I began with, you know, I wish you the best on that. But regarding the remainder of this community supervision, I think there's some real serious issues. Thank you.
The board have any additional questions?
Can I mention one more thing?
Yes, ma'am. Sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Parole Officer Palmer did allow us to have, for him to have contact with his son through third party.
Okay. Again, I didn't mean to be dismissive of that either. It just sounds pretty complicated.
Okay. All right, Ms. Kofler, you can go ahead and have a seat. Mr. Kofler?
Yes.
So the board is coming up on the conclusion of the hearing now. Is there anything else you'd like to say to the board before the board goes into discussion?
Just that if I'm given another chance to prove myself, I will. I adjusted really well to society after 10 and a half years or whatever, and I love working, and I got my life out there, and I'm willing to follow all rules, whether I've seen my son, whether it's not seen my son, whatever it may be. You know, I kind of feel like it's just a waste of time here where I can at least be out, even if I can't see them, I can still be out there working, saving money, building my credit, giving her money for the house, taking stress off her shoulders, you know, I got a year left, so, I mean, even if I did good for 6 months to prove myself, and we both went to counseling and stuff, you know, work towards the goal of supervised visits or whatever it may be, whether it's a whole year or not, I mean, I got my life out there, and like, I'm great, I did good on parole, I never lied to my PO, I turned myself in. I knew I was getting violated, you know. I even called and asked if I'd come in an hour late so I could tune my car, and I was told no, I'll be there at 8, and I showed up at 8. I knew I was getting violated. I didn't abscond. I didn't, you know, I take responsibility for what I did. I know what I did wrong, and the same mistakes aren't going to happen. And, you know, I want to get on with my life. It's not working in here, you know. I just did all that time, and I learned my lesson. You know, I grew up, and I feel like I did show that over the year. Other than, and it was complicated, the dude's right. It was very complicated with my life. You know, a lot of things in life are complicated, but a lot of people aren't on parole and have people watching them. So it's like, but I was. So it was hard. It was hard. That situation was hard, but this is a major wake-up call for me and my wife, and I'm going to do whatever the parole wants me to do to where I can still get out and work and still have my car so we don't have to ruin both of our credits, turn off, put the car back in, and she don't have to sit out there and pay my credit card bills to keep my credit good, and I can help out and support my family like a man should do, you know? That's what I want to do, and if I'm given a chance, I'm not gonna let nobody down, you know. I know what I gotta do.
Okay.
Plain and simple.
Now, Mr. Kofler, there's just, you know, Imperial Palmer has received a text message from Ms. Kofler that said that you threatened to kill her and that you were stalking her and you were gonna kill her and her ex-boyfriend, that you kept her hostage in the car going through your phone for 8 hours. Is any of that true, sir?
Yeah, it is true. You know, I did make a statement about bringing that dude around my son and bringing him into our house and stuff, and that was what it was about. It wasn't outright that I was going to kill him or anything like that. It was just, I was mad, I was angry when I found out, and it was just a matter of just, you know, just don't bring that dude around my son, you know, and I spoke out of anger, and I said things I shouldn't have said. I could sit here and tell you I wasn't going to do it or whatever, But I wasn't, you know, it was out of anger, and I'm sure a lot of people say things out of anger, and I know I shouldn't have said it, and you know, I don't care what it is, I ain't coming back to prison. ain't gonna go kill nobody. I ain't gonna do nothing. I'm done breaking the law. I want to live a good life, you know. I'm not breaking. I hate this place, man. I do. I can't stand it. I can't stand being. I've been locked up a lot of my life, and it came to a point where I just absolutely. It was probably 4 years in, 4 years to my end date to where I got out, where I just realized how much I freaking cannot stand this place. Like, we're a downfall of society. I am. I feel like a piece of shit every day I'm in here, you know. And I need to prove it. I need to prove it to myself. I need to prove it to my family. I need to prove it, most importantly, more than anything, to my son. So he doesn't follow in the footsteps of my whole family, you know. I want to teach him good morals, good values, good integrity, you know. And I know all that stuff now. It took me a long time to learn it, but I learned it now, you know.
Okay, Mr. Crawford, the board's going to go into discussion, so while the board's in discussion, I'm going to ask you to remain on the line. I would to remain silent while the board's in discussion. You can hear the discussion taking place amongst the board, and we'll make a determination whether to revoke or reinstate you under community supervision, okay?
All right, thank you.
All right, the board is now into discussion. I have to tell you, I'm having a really hard time kind of with this particular incident, and this domestic violence thing is just creating a real problem for me. Mr. Crawford has gotten out, got a job, got credit. You know, he's been doing pretty good work-wise since he's been out, but this problem with the domestic violence is really a issue that seems to be escalating in here, and that is where I'm having the problem at. I think he's done all he can to be a good father. There's no threats of violence against the child himself, that he is making every effort to be a good father, and his son was sick, he was there with him for that, but there is a rocky relationship between him and Ms. Crawford, in which both of them admit that, you know, they've had extramarital affairs and it's created some problems. I'm just not sure that because of the community supervision and his parole, that he's going to be able to be out. I think it's setting him up for failure, that he is going to have some type of contact or something's going to happen between them, and he's going to wind back in custody and wind back in there. I'm very concerned about the domestic violence portion, which is the main portion. The PO has tried to work with him, and it just seems like it hasn't worked out, and his wife, Ms. Crawford, is actually here in support of him, asking him to be released. And she said the same thing in the letter that she had written. And she did make a statement while she was here that if he's not released, that she's going to go back to, I believe it was Denver or Oregon, that she was going to go back to Oregon and be with her family, get her life together, and that get away from all the negatives that they have here. And hopefully when Mr. Crawford gets out, if he was to be kept in prison, that he would be able to come up there and they'd be able to start their life all over again and live a productive life without the negatives that they seem to be going through at this period of time, having a hard time to adjust. This is kind of a different situation. You know, I would like to see him and his wife and his family be able to mend their relationship and stay together. However, that just doesn't seem like that's going to work while he's out on community supervision. So at this time, I'm not supportive of Mr. Coffer because of the domestic violence portion of the relationship, because of the fact the two of them do want to still work out their relationship and get together. They still want to have their son and have contact. That's just not something that's going to be able to work while he's on community supervision. However, I'm really willing to listen to the rest of my colleagues reference this.
I agree with you. I think it would be setting up for failure.
I agree with you.
So am I.
Okay, therefore, I am going to move to revoke the community supervision of Mr. Crawford, find that he was delinquent, did violate the terms and conditions of his supervision, had lapses about to lapse into criminal ways of confidence, and did become involved in domestic violence relationships, have contact with his wife, what he wasn't supposed to have, as well as tested positive for drugs. That would be my motion at this time.
I'll second.
Agreed.
Agreed.
A motion by myself, second by Ms. Rittenhouse. Agreed. Mr. Quinones. Agreed. Dr. Wright. Mr. Carver?
Yes.
So you can hear the discussion taking place. The board voted to revoke your community supervision, sir. Your wife stated that she may move out of state with the family and get to where she's working on herself and working on her own anger management, that when you're released, you'll be released on May 11th of 2019, that the two of you would be able to move out of state at that time and work on your relationship where you don't have any negative impacts of outside influences that impact you. So I just think that, you know, it would be very difficult for you, because both you and your wife want to work out your relationship, to be in a relationship where you have no contact, no phone contact, no texting, no other contacts that you'll be able to have as a result of the domestic violence in 2005 and the domestic violence and the order, although she lifted the order of protection, that the order of protection that she have on her. So I want to wish you guys the best of luck, sir, and all hopes that the two of you at some point would be able to work out the relationship for yourself as well as your son, sir. That's going to conclude your hearing at this time, Mr. Colfer. I do want to thank you for participating. I want to thank Ms. Colfer for taking the time and opportunity for coming down here, but that's going to conclude your hearing at this time, sir.
All right, thank you.
All right.